From Lubbock to Laredo, El Paso to Houston, and Dallas to Brownsville, we're Talking Texas with Pratt on Texas.
From the True Texan Studio on the high ground of Texas, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is the Texas Hour from Pratt on Texas, your home for Texas political and news analysis without a corporate management muzzle or leash. Our Lone Star story of the day, what about this idea that conservatives in Texas should let up the pressure on legislators because they had a great session last time? We talk with Anthony Holm on his op-ed, Conservatives, Let's Keep Winning, Not Fight Each Other. And it's a good discussion worthy of your time. In fact, it's so good we're going to talk more and do some podcast extras. But we'll have that interview coming up as the second half of today's program. Our Lone Star story of the day, sponsored by Allied Compliance Services, providing affordable turnkey drug and alcohol testing programs for business and institutions. By the way, many of you, the cost at running these is less than the discount you'll get on your insurance in some cases. So you need to get it done. And truckers, and fleet owners, you got all that DOT testing stuff to do. And when you have an accident, you got to have a go to a provider. Somebody's got to manage all that. Well, your third-party administrator should be Allied Compliance Services. Learn more at AlliedCompliance.com. The big political news in Texas since yesterday evening is Governor Abbott comes out full-throated for school choice. They're even using the word vouchers. Great, but will it be authentic school choice? Rhetoric from the governor doesn't match his very recent actions, so pardon my skepticism. If it's true, fantastic. I think, though, it's another example of the governor doing what he always does, reading the political tea leaves from other people's leadership and then trying to get in the swift current channel to advance the career. That's okay. I'm still for it. I mean, you know, if that's the, I don't care what the motivation is. I'm just not sure it's real. And we'll get into that. And a lot of other people today, even over on the left, noticing what my immediate reaction. And then when I did press review today, noticing that it's not even the conservatives, but even the liberals at Reform Austin and everybody else have the exact same, raise the exact same point about how this isn't consistent with Abbott's recent actions. Remember, you can listen to Pratt on Texas anywhere, anytime, whenever it fits your schedule. Get the podcast of today's show and long-form interviews at PrattOnTexas.com. Go back to last week, last Tuesday's show, and listen to my special edition recorded sitting right there by the actual Come and Take It cannon. That's right, the cannon that we get all that from, the Come and Take It cannon at the memorial, the Gonzales Memorial in Gonzales, Texas. It's a fabulous show. What a great thing the podcast allows. So you can go listen to that. My friends had a good time last evening with the True Texas Project Lubbock chapter. And thank you for inviting me. I kind of took a little different tack since I was mostly talking to folks who were campaign and political activists. But it was fun. I really enjoyed it. I don't always have the time to do those things, and I really did enjoy that, and thank you to everyone who was involved in that. Wholesale power, oh, and thanks to the listeners that showed up. I did not put it out in the listener club email because I knew the size of that room because I once used that room for temporary church services, and if I'd put a listener club email out, we would have tripled the capacity. That's why I didn't send a notice out to you folks. I just put it up on one social media account. Still a bunch of you came. Thank you. Wholesale power prices hit $5,000 per megawatt hour in Harris County. Why? Well, let me give you this key piece in the Chronicle. With demand sky high for power, this is yesterday in this hot weather, transmission bottlenecks, limited supplies to the Houston area, and the price for wholesale power in Harris County jumped as high as the cap, $5,500 per megawatt hour, compared with prices that typically average about $30. Meanwhile, on the other side of the bottleneck, just south of Matagorda Bay, power that had no place to go flooded the market and pushed prices into the negative numbers, meaning they're paying you to take the power for the day for the utilities. Generators had to pay customers to take the electricity. Good grief. Well, what's this about? Is this the winter storm all over again? No. It's all about congested transmission lines. And who are the people that always fight these transmission lines? It's the dang environmentalists and the liberals. Always they wanted the wind power. They voted to spend billions of dollars passed on to every single consumer in the ERCOT to get all these panhandle wind farms down there. And then when they get down to where the liberals live in Austin in the Hill Country, because they've taken over the Hill Country, remember, they fought the transmission lines tooth and nail because it would spoil our beautiful view. No kidding. Massive political opposition. That's what you see all the time. They always want their cake and they want to have the cake. If you don't know that thing about having the cake, eating it too, the point is if you eat it, you don't have the cake anymore, right? So they want to have the best of both worlds. They want to eat it, but then they want to have it. But they always oppose transmission lines. Well, so they're going to pay for more for power. Margaret Alkick Williams, who's a big Houston socialite, oil fortune inheritant and heir, and she gave a good. She's always supported. She loves ballet. She's always supported the Houston Ballet, which is a very good ballet company. She's donated their large. I mean, she's given them $5 million before and $1 million here and there, but she gave them their largest single gift, $10 million to the Houston Ballet. I love private money. You know, people can give it to the things they enjoy and want to perpetuate and that we get to then enjoy. You don't like ballet? Well, that's because you've probably never seen really good ballet. A great old friend said that people, he's talking about his fellow people in Lubbock. Said they wouldn't know the difference between a good ballet and a bad ballet unless the dancer fell down and broke his leg. But I'll never forget that. Oh, boy. Argument over underwear leads to stabbing. This is a typical Wichita Falls headline. Good headline writing. KFDX. There's a lot to the story, but this guy's uncle's homeless and the sister lives in a house, lets him keep his clothing in a shed outdoors. Came back to get clothing from the shed to go to work, and the other one that lives there accused him of stealing his underwear. They began a fight, and then one of them grabbed a tube before the guy did and started hitting his uncle over the head. And then the uncle remembered he had a knife and went to retrieve it for using it on his nephew. Boy, there's some family values there in the Falls. Vincent was the young guy with the tube before was accused of the homeless uncle of stealing underwear, was arrested on prior warrants out for his arrest. Yeah. You see, this is one of the things everybody's talking about. It's kind of a funny story. They both have charges pending. We just went through a big city council race where I live. Everybody's talking about crime, but here's one thing that bugs the heck out of me. I read the press like nobody in this state. I'm reading it from all over the state every day. They're a bunch of Austin-centric types. They read like the top seven newspapers, and they think they've read the press because, you know, rural Texas and small cities, you're the rubes, they don't care. I read all these press outlets, and so often people involved in crime had other warrants out for their arrest. Now, we have a massive skyrocketing crime problem. And for all you council candidates everywhere, I want you to listen to me, who were going on and on about, we got to do something, but I'm not sure what it is. Nobody ever talks about this. How about true, or pay that overtime, not just for having people in a cruiser to interdict crime. How about we start weekly warrant roundups? You know, once in a while you'll see a warrant roundup for stuff that makes the county money or something like traffic fines or something. We've got all kinds of people out on warrants who haven't been picked up. How about we just start doing that? Because that gets them off the street right away, and we know the reason they have warrants and they're still out there and we interdict them again is they're recidivists. That's a simple thing we could start doing. Big warrant roundups. All right, Dallas County grand jury being pushed by their far-left district attorney, Cruzat, worked 2 years to get a grand jury to indict Dallas and neighboring police officers on charges of assaulting protesters back in 2020. Some of this stuff might have been, you know, a Garland officer, Dallas officers. I've read through, there's a very good report by Hayden Sparks at the Texan that's a lot more fair than some of the others. And a lot of this has to do with following policy and using less lethal rounds to stop these riots. And then the people sue or go to the cop, claim they were assaulted. I don't think this is a very good set of indictments. Back in a moment.
Don't miss what Pratt says next. More Pratt on Texas after the break.
I wouldn't be without my license to carry as it protects me in New Mexico and other states, and it makes buying a new firearm much faster. West Texas Justice provides full Texas license to carry training at only $65. And instructor David Mead offers full service training even for beginners. David is a retired deputy U.S. Marshal and certified Texas license to carry instructor. Be wise, be trained, be legal. Inquire today at westtexasjustice.com. That's westtexasjustice.com. westtexasjustice.com.
If providing health insurance for yourself or your employees is costing more than you can afford, listen closely to this message.
I think one of the challenges that all small business owners are facing today is while they may be less than 50 employees, they're still competing with the big box companies that have full-blown benefit plans.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
And with the price almost reaching the point of unaffordability, employers are looking for solutions. And my out-of-the-box thinking is providing a solution. We enrolled a local company, and we were able to save that employer one-third of his budget, which was equal to a little over $100,000 that he was paying prior to working with my agency.
Life, Health, Dental. With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. Hurley Benefit Services is independently owned, and they're online at hurleybenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y benefits.com.
Specialty Trucks of Lubbock. It's in the name, Specialty Trucks. Mike and Jason find and rehab good condition, good reputation work trucks that can help you and your business. Half ton all the way up to 2 ton work trucks. Mike and Jason are hands-on, finding trucks and working on them in the shop. Call them at 806-687-1115 or go to specialtytrucksoflubbock.com to get Mike or Jason's cell number. Solve problems and save money with Specialty Trucks of Lubbock. It's in the name, Specialty Trucks. specialtytrucksoflubbock.com.
He's a bullfrog with a bullhorn, and he's not afraid to use it. Now, more Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas, my friends. The big political story. Let's start with some good headlines from people we respect. Texas Public Policy Foundation praises Governor Abbott's support for school choice. And that group's recent former head, who's now the head of the prestigious Heritage Foundation, here's their headline. Heritage Foundation applauds Texas Governor Abbott's plan to empower parents, provide choice in education. Governor Abbott's proposal to empower parents by giving them the choice of sending their children to any public charter or private school with state funding following the student is what Texas families need, said Kevin Roberts at Heritage. Lindsay Burke, the director of their Education Policy Center, said what Governor Abbott's advocating is exactly what school choice looks like. Texans are rightly proud of their state's record of economic success, but this bastion of liberty has lagged behind when it comes to education choice. Now get this, you didn't know this. Texas is the only state in the South without any kind of private school choice option. A lot of states have put it in for, really awful metal detectors at the door, perennially failing urban schools and stuff to at least allow some of the poorer minorities and poor folk, period, to get out to better schools. It's a lot more common than you think. Now, the teacher groups, the unions, they're all dead set against all this. Greg Sindelar, the new CEO of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, said they're deeply grateful to Abbott for his leadership in advancing a parents' bill of rights. Well, he's already advanced that, and frankly, most everything in it's already an element of state law. That was a trying to copy Youngkin. It's typical of Abbott. Get in on whatever is showing electoral success, and his parents' bill of rights he already put forward is not particularly innovative. There's very little in it that's not already in state law to some degree, but on the choice where the money follows the child, hey, governor's for it, great. The Hearst newspaper's headlines, Governor Abbott pitches school voucher plan for Texas at San Antonio rally. Abbott pledged that public schools would be kept fully funded as he couched his support for school. Well, they should be, sure. Here's the difference. Fully funded, they're funded based on the number of people they serve. And this is, by the way, what pulls all these people apart when they say, well, you can't, where is that piece from the, yeah, here's over from Reform Austin. You can't, they're quoting one of the big school people. You can't fully fund public schools and address the worst teacher shortage in Texas history by siphoning off public dollars to private schools. The math doesn't work. Well, this is exemplary of why the public schools are so bad, because the people running them don't have any math skills. You see, if you lose a significant number of students to your bureaucratic government school, guess what happens? Your funding's based mostly on, or largely, average daily attendance. You do get some base tax money. The fact is, your costs go down because your costs are supposed to be a unit of each student that you're educating. In other words, if you have 25 fewer students in this elementary school, that's one less teacher that's needed. Oh, it doesn't hurt teacher employment because you have competition. They get a much more robust market with much more competition for their services, with people all over and all kinds of different schools trying to hire them. I mean, schools that maybe operate in the afternoon to early evening or all kinds of different things. It's just so much more of a great marketplace to have real education competition for parents. There are some people that might want to go to school all summer in some private schools and be off in the winter months. You know, I don't know. That's the beauty of choice and freedom that we have with grocery stores. I mean, everything from the corner convenience store to the giant mega Walmarts. Competition creates all these different opportunities. So teachers win with the opportunity of tons of competition. Back to this piece in the Hearst Papers, advocates for increased funding in public schools, traditionally Democrats and rural Republicans. Typically, most of the rural Republicans I know don't think their local schools are worth a darn, but anyway, typically oppose such, quote, school voucher, end quote, policies. A voucher is a word they've demonized. All it means is the ADA money, average daily attendance money for the child, just as it's already done now for decades to charter schools, follows the child. That's it. So if the child unenrolls from the big public school here, or maybe they're in a private school now, and then they decide to go over to a charter school or back to a public school, guess what? That school gets paid the average daily attendance money, and that's all that means. They oppose this because they believe spurring enrollment to private schools or charter schools weakens the traditional public school system. Isn't that funny? You go to a rural county and they all cry about this, and so many of the rural county schools are really good, so many are absolutely awful. Wouldn't you rather be using that Bible school building down at the local Methodist or Baptist church or Church of Christ or whatever as a school where you could put your children in it and not have to be rich to do so? I mean, how does that hurt your town? Well, we won't have as many people for football. And bingo, that's what it's all about. They don't care about the academics. Your town's going to be enriched. A lot of small companies, I've had personal experience with a successful business locating in a small town in West Texas, and the owners deciding that with their children on the way, they're not going to live there, and that led to the moving and selling of the business because they didn't want to be in that. If they had had the opportunity at a regular type income to have their children get a really good education but could not homeschool because they were both professionals and that was, you know, why they were doing what they were doing, they didn't want to go to a small town. You local people are really missing the boat on this. Having the opportunity to let regular people move their kids to wherever they want are going to create other options in your town and then allow you to overcome the seemingly insurmountable problem of the big spending local public school that, you know, likes new buildings and stadiums, but the academic quality is awful. And a guy putting in a little pipe plant, a guy with some money that would like to be in a rural area, but has children or grandchildren with his own children working in the family business don't want to go there. I mean, I know all around the area I'm from how many kids travel all the way to a neighboring county to go to a private church school. It's not segregation or anything like that. It's or drive to Lubbock. Lots of people. Because they just know how bad it's gotten in the local public school, and yet the local leaders are saying, well, you can't have a choice. Well, that money's, and those kids are leaving your town, and they're having lunch or dinner somewhere else. Do you understand that with choice, they might very well stay in your town? Because you might could run a new little school, a private school, down the street with 15 kids enrolled. Boy, that'd be a nice school to go to. Talk about the amount of personal attention. I'm just telling you, there's a lot to be for in this. But here's the problem. They talked about his, again, in this. I like this line in the big Hearst piece because they sort of get it about Abbott. Politically, the desire from parents to have more power over their kids' education has been an animating issue for conservatives over the last year, meaning we've won elections around the country on this, including across Texas school board races. That's why this comes out after Saturday's election. These big conservatives, they didn't win in Abilene. I don't know if they weren't connected to these other PACs, but they won all over the state, not just Tarrant County, as I reported yesterday, all over the state. Big sweeps of school boards. So the governor's people, who are always political windsock watchers, jumped on this yesterday, and, you know, with Youngkin, and they point out here, school board races in Virginia, where the issue helped propel Republican Glenn Youngkin to victory last year. Abbott's not leading. he's jumping on it. What everybody, my first knee-jerk reaction is, great, wonderful, but does he really mean it? And all the real conservatives in their press today asked the question, let's go to the Reform Austin, the liberal news deal. What is not clear is Abbott's thought process by mentioning this during a runoff election, which includes a number of anti-voucher, meaning anti-school choice incumbents that he endorsed and that the Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan, has supported. He may be hanging his own people out to dry. Well, Abbott's certainly up to that. If he thinks it's good for Abbott but will hang the others out to dry, he would do it because that's how self-motivated he is. But I'll tell you, this is the point. Does he really mean it, or is it all for the talk and then just sort of let it die with the regular excuses in the legislature? Only time will tell, but I hope he really means it. Back in a moment with more on Pratt on Texas.
Stay in the saddle. Pratt on Texas will be right back.
Do you think going to the dentist for a lot of work can be fun? How about if it cost you much less and, as part of the deal, you got a wonderful vacation in one of the world's most desired locations? Costa Rica is world-renowned for dentistry and its dental laboratories, and our dentist, Dr. Silvia Zuniga of DentoCare, provides the kind of expert, personalized service you would think only the super wealthy would get. I'm not kidding about that. Costa Rica is also one of the most desirable countries to visit in summer or winter, and you'll even be near Texas Tech's new campus when with Dr. Zuniga. Many Pratt on Texas listeners have made the trip a few more than once and have said it was one of the best decisions they've made. Learn more about our dentist and friend, Dr. Silvia Zuniga and DentoCare, by clicking the banner at PrattOnTexas.com. Go to PrattOnTexas.com and click on the DentoCare banner. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
What happens if another party responsible for your injury doesn't step up to make your loss whole? How do you go about getting what you're owed for your loss? Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group can help get those responsible to actually accept and act on that responsibility. Ted Liggett does it every day with integrity, advocacy, and results. Call Ted Liggett, the heavy hitter, at 806-744-HURT or visit LiggettLawGroup.com. Don't be cheated. Call Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group.
Communication's a top priority with commercial builder Tommy Klein Construction. A 20-year-plus Tommy Klein Construction customer said, when we call, text, or email, the majority of the time we get a response back within the hour. Many times they call us before we have a question with updates on our projects. And with Tommy Klein Construction, if there's a need for an adjustment or warranty, they give it top priority as if it were their own building. Tommy Klein Construction, general commercial building contractors. Reach them, 806-438-3384, 806-438-3384.
Now, a man who understands that elected officials work for us. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas, ladies and gentlemen. We're visiting with Anthony Holm. Anthony Holm is a longtime Texas Republican Party activist, conservative, movement conservative, and worked in all kinds of races, political races and everything, going back to the days when we took the majority in the Texas legislature. So it's nice to talk with someone that's been around in the time frame that I have. And Anthony has a big op-ed that was published in the Uber Lib Houston Chronicle. That's certainly why it's an op-ed, opposite editorial view. And it's a good piece, opinions. It's conservatives, let's keep winning, not fight each other. And I know a lot of you rolling your eyes because you've heard this over and over your whole life. Don't fight each other. It's often the people who are doing the biggest backstabbing running around privately telling everybody to heed Ronald Reagan's command about don't speak ill of your fellow Republican. And then, of course, they're kneecapping people in the back room. But nevertheless, this is an issue that comes up a lot. And Anthony Holm, welcome to Pratt on Texas. If you would, you make some very strong points about the last few years in the Texas legislature and the environment there and what's happened. Talk about this piece, kind of lay it out for us, then we'll discuss it.
Of course, and thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me on. Look, for the last better part of 20 years, I've been one of the people fighting our own very aggressively. So that is not the echo chamber in which I've lived in of, hey, let's not fight each other. Quite the opposite. I've been leading the charge up the Hill. In many instances, what is striking to me is for the last 15 years or so, as somebody who's been aggressively pushing movement policies at the Texas legislative level, most of our things have died. in the House. And for about a decade, what I put in the op-ed, suffering, people like us suffered through the Strauss decade, all of our stuff died. And then we had a...
Isn't it interesting, because you go back long enough to remember that what was always the rule? It dies in the Senate. It dies in the Senate. And the whole world has been turned upside down in the last decade and a half or so, hadn't it? It's very interesting how that near 100-year, even when it was all Democrat Party, that 100-year rule sort of flipped under the Strauss leadership, where even the mainstream Republican stuff seemed to go to the House to die as opposed to the Senate. And that really is historically a big change in the legislature.
Very much so. It's striking. So now the Senate is one of the leaders, of course, on issues and moving policy. And things for the better part of the last 15, 16 years have been dying in the House, left and right. We would start the session kind of knowing that was the likely outcome. What struck me and why I wrote the piece and why I'm on this show, and thank you for having me again, is last session was really different. It was shockingly different. I started actively working in the legislature in 1993. I don't remember a session where the House has performed at this level. You know, the heartbeat bill, the constitutional carry bill, CRT bans, no boys and girls sports. It's a pretty long list. And I just think we have to give some credit where it's due. Number one, I don't want to praise up and down people that aren't aligned with us, but I want to recognize these outcomes. And most importantly, my objective with all of this exchange, the op-ed and conversation, is let's make last session the new normal. It can be the new norm. Like, we haven't experienced this for 25 years and we finally grabbed a hold of it. So is what we're doing today going to help us recreate that next session? And some people disagree. They think yes. I happen to think no. It's a fair debate to have, but I think it's a debate worth having if we want to achieve the policy outcomes and objectives. And that is where I start every nugget thought and writing that I make.
Results oriented. I'm exceptionally results oriented in every area of my life. I don't care, you know, about the praise. I don't care about all the people involved, whatever. No personality worship here. It's the result that matters. And you write in the piece, I fear this success that we just had is unlikely to continue next session. If my suspicion is correct, then the failure of conservative policy outcomes will fall squarely on our shoulders, meaning the movement conservatives, the shoulders of us and our mega donors, not because our policies are flawed, but rather our political strategies are flawed. And we're visiting with Anthony Holm about his piece in the Houston Chronicle, Conservatives, Let's Keep Winning, Not Fight Each Other. I've heard this mantra my entire life. Once I've been on both sides, establishment side, longtime incumbent side, you know, behind the scenes, challenger side, you name it. One of the commonalities of all people in power is that they seek to want to remain in power, and they see any and all outside pressure or having to be opposed in primaries as some kind of negative. And sometimes they'll be arrogant enough and people will go along with it to say, oh, we're doing all these great things that gets in the way. I don't believe that. I'm a capitalist. I'm self-employed my entire life, Anthony. I think creative destruction in the marketplace works very well in politics, and that no matter how conservative these guys are, with a very few exceptions of just deep personal rootedness in conservatism, that there has to be pressure on incumbents all the time to continue going, you know, all of our, the right way. All of our great thinkers talk about how if you're not decidedly conservative, you will drift left. And this seems to be the experience. So what's the problem with our mega donors and people, you know, going after certain incumbents they feel, and I think properly in many cases, ditched or destroyed or stood in the way of certain bills that conservatives want to see have passed? So what if they got a whole bunch done? They didn't get as much as the people wanted. They're there to serve the people. What's wrong with the people rising up, even within the confines of the party, and putting pressure on them? Why is that so bad?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it, of course, and many argue, myself included, that it's good for democracy, for people to be challenged. What I am trying to suggest is, if we want to achieve these outcomes again, or even more of them, is the best way to go after folks in primaries who are generally quite conservative. There are 10 or 12 Republicans who I think we all know are pretty moderate, and we have to drag across the line, and sometimes they vote against our stuff. You know, we saw that with the taxpayer lobbying.
Right, but it doesn't even get to a vote. What people have to understand is the biggest problem that most of us conservative people have is that leadership and others not letting things have a vote because these people stand in the way procedurally behind the scenes. And it oftentimes the very people you're praising for the great last session are the people who put those individuals in positions of power as committee chairman and in other positions to stop bills from coming forward. So they're not relieved. They're not relieved of responsibility for important legislation not getting over just because a moderate or a turncoat is the one that stopped the bill. They gave those people those positions of power. So it's not, you argue that we ought to just focus on those moderates that are truly outright moderates and not go after some other people who have better conservative credentials that have been with us on most things. Hey, I get the idea. If you get most of what you want, that's good. But when they empower those moderates and Democrats openly, that allows in a way that allows them to stop legislation, I think they've gone out and bought the target and painted it on themselves.
Robert, your point is precisely mine, actually. The structural organization of the House has creates a dilemma that you described.
It's a problem.
And they kill bills without even getting the floor. And it is a problem. And that's why last session was so different. They had all of that opportunity to bury the CRT bill, the UIL bill, the constitutional carry bill, things that have been entered into the legislature and rallied behind by all of us for so many years, yet they all got through. Could they have killed them? Probably, almost certainly. Historically, they did for 20 years. They could have gamed the system and used the structure that you described to kill that, but they didn't.
All right, hold on, the clock's got us. Sir. It's Anthony Holm. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Stay with us on Pratt on Texas.
Pratt's interview continues in a moment. Stand by.
If you're sick to death of the mainstream news, we invite you to check out 21st Century Watch magazine. We cover developments we have no choice but to watch from a biblical perspective. Not only is it priceless, it's free. Call 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. That's 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. A little hope would be nice.
General Manager Jimmy Rogers invites you to experience the best in dining at Las Brisas Southwest Steakhouse, where in addition to the best steaks and seafood, they have the largest French wine selection in Lubbock. Las Brisas is a rare Best of Award of Excellence winner from Wine Spectator. Spirits aficionados will find a large, special collection of cognac, bourbon, scotch, and other whiskeys, many of which are in the very rare category. Plan a great evening at Las Brisas Southwest Steakhouse soon.
With Corley Demo and Construction, it's not just tearing it down or digging it up. Corley Demo and Construction finishes the job by leveling it off and cleaning it up. Excavation down to 10 feet, plumbing and electrical trenching too, and dump trucks to haul dirt in or out. Free estimates. Contact us today at CorleyDemoAndConstruction.com. Quality work, quality cleanup. CorleyDemoAndConstruction.com. Free estimates. CorleyDemoAndConstruction.com.
Today's vehicles require more electrical power from the battery than ever before, and Texas Battery will get you the correct battery. Even better, Texas Battery will install your new battery without a power loss, helping you avoid resetting your electronics. Service and specific knowledge sets Texas Battery apart from big box stores and franchised chains. Go to TexasBattery.com for more information or stop by Texas Battery in Lubbock for the correct battery for your vehicle. Texas starts with TexasBattery.com. TexasBattery.com.
Some claim to cover Texas. Here's a man who proves his claim daily. It's your Texas political swami, Robert Pratt, with Pratt on Texas.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're visiting with longtime conservative activist Anthony Holm, who has written an op-ed in the Houston Chronicle, Conservatives, Let's Keep Winning, Not Fight Each Other. Anthony's making the point that this last session, and by the way, friends of mine who are in the legislature, some in leadership, have been saying that, you know, it was one of the most conservative sessions ever. It was so great. We got all these bills passed. But then we have to back off and say, okay, you get everybody gets some red meat done. Maybe we threw more red meat out there and got it passed. Let's take the election bill. We went and took stuff. The whole country's focused on election reform. We went and took bills. We tightened them up. We, you know, some good, some bad. It was all pretty good in the end, except we lowered the penalties from felonies to misdemeanors and then refused to do anything about it in special session. I don't know about you, but to me, that takes all the goodwill away, especially as someone that's actually run elections and worked around this subject for, you know, 25 or 30 years. The whole idea was to make people have to pay when they monkey with our elections. And in return, not only did they reduce the penalties in the House, they then really stamped their feet in a fit and didn't want to address it later on. That takes a lot of the goodwill away. I get the idea they passed a lot of stuff, but they also left some things dead that had time to get a vote and just didn't want to have a vote. You know, the old, my job's to protect the members from having to cast a controversial vote thing. Talk about
that.
Well,
I'll take it far. I will. I'll take it farther, Robert. There isn't one bill that I am praising that I wouldn't have made some change on. 100%.
Sure.
But
sure.
Before we went to the break, you said, hey, they've gamed the system for years, and this is how they kill all the bills. They intentionally did not game the system in these bills, and we got some pretty good stuff, better than you and I both say, better than we've seen in decades, maybe 40 years, number one. And then number two, look at the position. What I'm talking about is the future. Look at the position we put House leadership in. We're going to go and spend millions of dollars to try to take out these incumbents, which is our right and part of democracy. No, fine, we're doing it. So House leadership has to go and raise millions of dollars to defend the Republicans, incumbents who just passed these bills, for better or worse. It's the best thing that you and I have seen in 30 plus years. So I say to us, my tribe, movement conservatives, are they more or less likely to repeat last session, next session, because they had to go to a bunch of moderate donors, moderate Republican donors, to defend their incumbents?
I've never seen leadership not raise money, period, irrespective of whether they're being, because it's where you get power. It's why, for example, the governor stepping out of the legislative realm, it's why the governor has such a massive war chest. It solidifies,
yes,
your position, and even if you don't have to use the money, they still raise the money because they want to be,
yes,
able to dangle it out there to members. Hey, if you need help, I'll be here to help you, but if you cross me, you're not going to get any help, and, you know, I might even help an opponent. I want to ask you this. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. And it also gives power to the donors. Less power, but some power. I'm not inclined to give moderate R's who don't want the heartbeat bill 2.0 passed more power.
Right.
I'm inclined to give them less.
Me too.
To get some power by us, either by trying to knock everyone down, or even making some donation, or praising some of the stuff, saying, hey, this needs to be a felony, but at least you went out and acted, because the House hasn't acted as often. I mean,
the election bill and a few bills that didn't get a vote at the very end when we had time, because there was time that the stuff was ready to be discharged out of calendars earlier. Those things, if they'd just been given a vote, even if they were voted down, would have pleased conservatives. There were things that didn't get a vote. The elections bill is particularly telling because it's the number one issue in the country at the time that the legislature was working on it. It's not as if they didn't get as much as we wanted. They actually turned the dial back from felony to misdemeanor on the way the law was already written. And that really goes down as a bitter pill. I mean, it happens. Legislation, my gosh, it's messy and it's often poorly written and there are a lot of deals to be struck. But I want to ask you this question. I want to ask you a question. What evidence,
yes, sir,
do you have that these borderline conservatives would pass more than a few red meat issues to satisfy the base without the primary pressure? Because last session, you say last session was so great and so different, but last session follows on the heels of several election processes where movement conservatives and some of their, quote, mega donors, end quote, went after them. Was this last session not an outcome of the very policy that you say is not positive? Because I think you can just as well argue it.
Here's the answer. Here's the answer. We have been targeting this profile of Republican with about the same dollars for the last 6, 7, 8 election cycles. But that didn't change the policy outcomes until last session. So if you're going to say that, oh, well, it was a result of our primary targeting, and that's why they went and moved all the – then why didn't it work for the 5 cycles prior?
Because you had had a Speaker of the House who was absolutely who was elected with mostly Democrat support and then enough non-conservative Republicans who was absolutely against the conservative agenda.
And our caucus changed that finally.
Right, and I would say came from the primary pressure that you're decrying. Because every incumbent I've ever known, the one thing they don't want to have to do is fight a big primary. And they all hate the idea of having to fight a big primary for the most part. I take that back. I've known one or two people who just love campaigning, okay? But let's set them aside. Nobody wants to fight that primary issue. I think you make very strong pieces points in this piece, and I'm not in total disagreement. But I think it's just as easy to argue and see it from the eyes of movement conservative activists that it has been the pressure and the threat of a primary race that has moved the House to the more conservative position. And then you're arguing, okay, now let's not focus that pressure in the same way anymore because we're punishing guys that accomplished a lot. I just don't see any historical evidence that they start accomplishing even more if we take the pressure off.
I fear we're going to run out of time. So let me at least make these two points, please. We did something 7 times in a row, and it worked on the 7th time. It failed in the first 6, and I think I hear you're saying, therefore, we should do it over and over again. Maybe. And what about the disincentive of the, you know, these guys had so much grief. The D's fled. The national news descended and really pounded them. They're under tremendous pressure by all sides, us and them. They largely came through. There isn't one bill that I wouldn't change. And there are some issues that got left on the table. And I, too, am somewhat offended by that, if not offended by that. But I also want to recognize drastic change over the last 25 years. And I think we should throw them a bone at least. This is the most half full outcome that I have been involved with since 93.
I would agree with that approximation of the session, but you say, well, we did it for 7 years. It didn't work. Then it worked. Well, what's the rule of thumb? How long does it take to get a bill passed?
Is it causation or correlation?
I understand that, and there's a difference between them. But how long does it take to get a bill passed? The rule of thumb is it takes 3 sessions to move a movement forward and get it passed. That's 6 years. I mean, you know, it takes a long time to make changes there. It doesn't happen overnight. And I'm just not sure that – I'm not sure that what a bunch of folks need is – I think you're right that one of our problems in the movement conservative side is a lot of our organizations don't – pat them on the back when they do well. They focus totally on the one or two things that don't get done. But on the other hand, I've never seen a shortage of ego in political people, and especially those in leadership, that says that patting them on the back and cheering them really makes them perform any better. So I guess I'll just stay with my cynical viewpoint on that. But it's a good piece, and I think everybody ought to read it at the Houston Chronicle by Anthony Holm, H-O-L-M. Conservatives, let's keep winning, not fight each other. Very strong points made, Anthony. And again, not in total disagreement, just not sure that the change you advocate would get the change we need. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Folks, we're going to talk more with Anthony Holm in the future because he's been around long enough to know what he's talking about. It's a delight to me. Long live liberty, long live Texas, and may God bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.
Hear all the great Texas music Pratt on Texas is famous for by listening to the show on the air or by stream. 5 to 6 p.m. Central in Lubbock. Tune to 98.7 FM or 1420 AM on KWBF. In Abilene and the Big Country, tune to 96.1 FM Q Country.